Welcome to Be Inspired. This is season 2, episode 8 of our lovely, lovely podcast. As you guys probably know by now, this is a chance for you to be inspired as we speak to loads of different people from around the performing arts industry. And I'm very excited to share with you today's guest, which is Greg Kelly. Hello, Greg.
Hello, Becca. Glad to be here. And looking forward to this podcast with you.
Amazing. Me too. I've been very much looking forward to this. I've known you for a very long time. But
yes, we have. We go way back to you being about that big.
Yes, I agree. And I suppose for anyone who maybe doesn't know who you are, do you want to tell us a little bit about you and about what you do as a creative?
Okay, yeah. So as you know, I'm Greg Kelly, and as a creative, I originally started off as an actor, musician, and that's where I trained at college and university. And then since I was 21 and graduated, I've pursued it ever since, as much as a full-time basis as one can. And then obviously the pandemic hit, and we then had to look at what we could do creatively in this setting. And it was from there that I decided to go for a job at St. Anne's Hospice, where my dad was, and bring my unique selling skills as a performer into the job as a community fundraiser, which I'm doing currently.
That's amazing. Wow. That, you know what? I was reading something yesterday on Twitter about how performers, actors, or any sort of creatives have so many transferable skills that you can take to other jobs. And I know I've certainly found that within the last year of, you know, during the pandemic. So it's amazing to hear that you've been able to use your skills in such a wonderful way. Tell us a little bit about that sort of side of things. So when did you decide to go for that job? What was it about it that you thought, I can give this a go?
Yeah, so back to last April, when the pandemic first, you know, took off, so to speak, I was living with my mum at the time, and there was a lot of inward thoughts and introspection on what best to do at this time, how to be positive at challenging moments, which everyone was going through. And so I looked inward at what can I do? What am I passionate about? And to take a slight deviation, I from my 20s onwards, I was very interested in joining the fire service. And so another very commendable job, and a highly skilled one, actually. And so April, May, June, July last year, I had a go at trying to join the fire service, because it was something I was always had a passion for. I thought, well, the pandemic's hit, acting, music, we can't do it. What can I do?
Yeah.
So I tried the fire service, tried Great Manchester, and I had a contact through my role-playing work. I had a contact at South Yorkshire. And so I was role-playing there. Even during the pandemic, I had the odd shift, the odd corporate day there, playing a firefighter with like a bereavement issue. And then it's just funny how things happen, connections. And Fran, the lady there, said, oh, we've got a contingency fire crew coming up where we were recruiting. And my ears pricked up. I was like, oh, okay. And then she goes, yeah, I think you'd be great for it if you want to go for it. So I went for it, and it was last summer. I went for it, and I got to the drill stage, so I passed the tests, and I got to the final hurdle of becoming a contingency firefighter. So the childhood dream and of being one was coming close to realization. However, the drills, and I had to do an enclosed space activity, and I reached my limit. And basically, you have to go in the dark in all the firefighting gear and an oxygen BA mask, and you have to scramble through one side with partial vision. You come out of the container, you're going up and down, scurrying, and then they put a complete blindfold on you, and then you go back, and you've got to do it within a set time. And I love a challenge, but over the years, I've become a little bit of a, like, when I, even on a plane, I get a little bit claustrophobic at times.
Yeah.
And so this was my biggest challenge. I knew it was going to come up. It's called enclosed space drill. And I did all the others, but here's the thing, it was the first drill as well, so I had to do this drill and then the rest after it. So you get two attempts, and I failed the first attempt. I came out the first side, and they said, are you ready to go out? Can I just adjust my breathing? And because it's a serious job, like, not, you can't adjust your breathing. No, you can't take it off for a sec. You have to go back in. So they said, you do get another go, though, if you want. So I said, all right, I'll do the others and I'll come back at the end and have another go. So I did the other drills, again, physically challenging, climbing up ladders and all sorts, lifting and whatnot. And then I came back to the enclosed space, the challenge, my greatest challenge to get this job. And this time the circumstances went against me again. The BA set that I used was left on the floor outside, and it was covered, could have been raining, so it was the visibility on the BA set was poor. And then it was darker outside, so the visibility in the container the hour earlier had gone now. So I was going in blind both ways. Anyway, after about a minute in there, I was like, I'm done, and I tapped out. And it was a real eye-opener of how calm you have to be in enclosed space as a firefighter, and how much kudos and respect I have for them. Fast forward it to a week later, though, and I walked out. Obviously, I was disappointed driving home from South Yorkshire. And I was then role-playing for 2 weeks after this experience, and some of the firefighters in the drill were then in the sat facing me, and they're nervous and inexperienced, and I'm sat there as a role player.
Yeah.
And so that was just funny how in an instant or in 2 week time span, the roles can reverse in your life with anyone. So they're looking to me nervous like I was in this container. But a chap called Wes, he was a senior, he was like high up station manager, and we got chatting throughout, and you know me, Becca, I don't like to get beaten. I don't take things lying down, and if there's a challenge and I don't overcome it, I want to know why I've not overcome it and identify it and then try and overcome it. Yeah. So I said to Wes, station manager, I've had this issue with the enclosed space. He said, oh, a lot of people do. Don't worry about that. And he said, what was it? And I just said it was my breathing and they just not knowing where I was going. And so after speaking with him for 2 weeks as an actor, role player there, on the last day, he brought his kit in and he said, because the container, I kept walking past the container that beat me. I always thought when I was doing the role playing, and Wes brought his kit in, he said, should we go and have a go at it now then? Because he said, if I had the chance to do it again, I'd like to identify what it was that stopped me in my tracks to complete the task. So I go down, I put his kit on, it fits, so that's lucky. And then he talks me through the process, teaches me some tools in how to navigate in the dark, which I had no idea of because I was inexperienced in that. So like you say, it's relearning a new skill that we've all had to do during the pandemic. And within 15 minutes, I did it 4 or 5 times. The adrenaline was high, but I was so pumped and happy that I overcame that obstacle.
Yeah.
And finished the role play. And whenever I walked past that, I felt like I'd conquered it. And at the same time, it painted the picture of how challenging a firefighter role is. And I tried it, and I overcame that particular challenge. But maybe firefighting isn't for me. But at least I know I can overcome aspects of it as and when, and we all can. So it was great to overcome it, and it was a small victory that just gives you confidence in other areas of your life as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It sounds like it. And what an amazing thing to sort of discover is, I mean, we know that the emergency services work incredibly hard and tirelessly in their job roles. But I think to witness it firsthand, what they have to go through to even get there, is quite, it is quite unique, really. Not many people get that opportunity. So I presume that that kind of perhaps made you think, how else can I help people?
Yes.
Is that when you sort of looked into working with St. Anne's Hospice, do you think, or did it come a little bit later?
Yeah, so just to mention then, Sophie, for your listeners and people watching, to St. Anne's Hospice is very close to my heart, as you know, Becca, because in 2016, my dad was there for 7 weeks. He had a terminal illness, which led him to be at St. Anne's, and we cared for him at home. In the end, he was in a hospital bed in the front room, and as a family of six, we all rallied round and took shifts looking after my dad. But we came to a breaking point where it was too much for us. We were trying to be carers and then a family grieving and being there for our dad at the same time. So he went to Stepping Hill, and it was very busy there and not quite catered to end-of-life care. And then it was when St. Anne's Hospice came along, he was referred to there within about a week, and then he spent 7 weeks at the hospice. And I'll be honest, I had no idea what a hospice was. I was just told by my sister, oh, dad's at a hospice. He's at this place called St. Anne's in Heal Green. I was like, all right, I'll be there, you know, within the hour, whenever it was. And the experience of a hospice, again, I didn't have any preconception. A lot of people think it's just, that's where you go to. So much more than that. And just from the 7 weeks I was there, I was blown away by, it certainly wasn't the experience of being in an NHS hospital. It was really tailored to the individual patient, you know, from having a hairdresser on site, to chaplains coming to see you out in the garden. And then we had a cry to a brought records with an abundance of alcohol, because that's a hospice. They know they're just there to cater to whatever you want. They're trying to give you a dignified end. And at the same time, they don't want you to stay at the hospice on a permanent basis. Their endeavor is to get you back home with your family and having the right measures in place to be looked after. So that was the plan for my dad, to get him back home. It was a struggle though, because with his 3-year terminal illness, with him having 3 oxygen machines, it was going to be a challenge to manage that at home. He didn't make it at home, but he had that was the focus, and we all had that drive. And there was just many, many special moments in the hospice. Like, we had a slideshow in the ward. We asked all the patients in there, could we do this? They said yes. And so we had my cousins, and we all came in and watched a slideshow of my dad growing up. And for that moment, you forget my dad's ill, and it just transport you back to my dad's childhood, which was super special. And then obviously the day, not obviously, but naturally the day came, which we were dreading, that my dad was going to pass away. And it came on the 14th of March, 2016. And so, yeah, that was a difficult moment as a family. And like, as you know, as we all know with grief, it affects us in many ways. And it was from the funeral, we did a collection for the hospice. It felt a natural thing to do after spent having such an intense 7 weeks there. And it was from the funeral collection that we began our fundraising journey for the hospice, because we got there with my dad, and we were just so grateful that we could just be there with my dad, rather than caring for him, and to find out that this service was free, and that they just were there at the right time, just blew me away and my family, that we had compelled to do something in a positive way for the hospice. So started with a funeral collection, and I'd always been a runner, as you know, done fundraising for other charities. So it was a natural next thing to do my half marathons for the St. Anne's. My brother, being a full-time musician, we then did an open mic. My sisters, my niece, Kate, sales, and getting the Palace Theatre, who we both know well, to do a bucket collection. And they did, and we got £4,000 in a day from the Billy Elliot musical. I managed to get the lead actress, called Annette McLaughlin, I think, to do a speech at the matinee in the evening. And I think that's what really convinced the 2,000 people to give something each show. So as the years progressed, we got to the pandemic, and we, just before the pandemic in 2016, I'm sorry, 2020?
Yes, so perhaps 2019?
So it was 2020, January, we were presented with a £16,000 cheque for all the fundraising we did since my dad passed away. And the reason we went for 16,000 was because that's what they need a day to for the hospice in Heal Green, Little Holton, and there's a site called Neil Cliff Centre at Withenshaw Hospital, for those three sites to stay open. And when we heard it was £16,000 a day and the excellent care my dad received, we were like, yeah, let's go for 16. The funny story is, by the time we got to 16, it's now 20,000 a day. So my sister was like, Greg, I know you might want to go for 20,000. I'm done at 16. So she's, you know, she's exhausted all her fundraising outlets. Whereas for me and you, we're always meeting new people.
Yeah.
It was like, no, I'm going to go on here. Yeah. We're going to get 20. And we're currently now knocking on the door of 19,000 from this year's fundraising.
That's amazing.
We're getting close. So back to your original question, I did digress. I just thought I would paint the picture of the hospice and our experiences there. The pandemic hit, acting stopped, music stopped. I tried the firefighting, that didn't quite work out. And then, because I had such a strong relationship with the fundraising team for the last 4 or 5 years, and I was doing a charity, and I got you involved last year. It came to me one day on a run, why don't I play every day in May for the hospice? And that was in April, and in May I did. So I played a different song in May every day on Facebook Live, which is pretty scary, Facebook Live.
Yeah, it is.
It's frightening. So, and the first day I did it, like I performed to hundreds of people, but to do a Facebook Live and to start my challenge, my mum was sat with me. It took me about an hour to actually press go live. Yeah. So I went live and the play every day, the premise was I'd play a song for a day in May and then I'd nominate someone each day. And I nominated yourself.
Yeah.
And not everyone played for me for a day in May, but that's not, it was just like the fun of it, of getting people involved, reaching out if you can fit it in. And you did fit it, and you did a great piece on your guitar, and it was an original song, wasn't it, you wrote?
Yeah.
Which I'd be interested to hear if you developed that, actually.
Yes. Well, since it has been developed, and my plan is to put it out there into the world, but it's just finding the time.
Yeah, it's fitting it in. But you should, because that was an excellent idea and excellent start of the song. So
look forward
to hearing that when that comes. So the play every day happened, and it was off the back of that. And it's funny, isn't it? Just connections. And so then you've got this profile of, oh, Greg, because I always have this feeling like I'm more than just a runner, because in recent years I've just put this running out there. So it's like, how can I put out there in a positive way that I've got other skills?
Yeah.
So the play every day suited that. And then the fundraising manager who'd seen I was playing every day noticed a job at St. Anne's for music facilitator, which is using music as medicine for palliative care patients and being really close in hand with the patients and using music as a therapy. It's a therapeutic way for them to have an outlet. So Lucy Leeming, fundraising manager at St. Anne's, she said, Greg, I think there's a job you'd be perfect for. You know about the hospice, you've been a family member there, your dad's been there, and you've got the music. So that's when the first time I was like, could I actually, you know, do another job than acting and music? Could I? So that's when, so I went for it. I applied. I thought, nothing to lose. And I didn't get it. And it was, but the experience, and again, everything now is on Zoom. So it was a Zoom interview. And in the end, I played a song on the guitar. I did some vocals. I played a bass. Did something on the keyboard as well. And on that, I was volunteering as well with the free time we had. And I was volunteering at this, again, associated with St. Anne's it's called a distribution centre, where all like donations come in and you sort through them. So they go to the shops, they go to the hospices. And when I was there and I found out about the music facilitator job interview, they asked, we'd love you to play as many instruments as you can. And I had a flashback to when I was at uni playing on the keyboard, which I'd not touched for years. And I knew the distribution centre had donated keyboards. So I came in and I said, hi, John, can I try out one of your keyboards and buy one off you? And found this really super easy one to play, did the trick, sounded good to me. And he said, and I said, how much do you want for it again? I like £20. No, he said, just give us a five for it. And he said, you've helped us for the last months. So I was like, so I've just got a keyboard for £5. This is meant to be. So I forced the £5 because he wouldn't even accept that. And then use that keyboard. And again, another skill I've developed since the pandemic was learning the keyboard. So I didn't get the music facilitator job, but I did develop my skill as a pianist or, you know, musician on the keyboard. So that didn't quite come into being, the music facilitator role. But then I thought, okay, if something else comes along that suits me, similar in the fundraising, and I put on my door actually during the pandemic, because I have post-it notes on my bedroom door of things to do, positive comments, you know, positive affirmations or to-do list, general to-do list and journaling. And the two were, when the pandemic hit, look into being a firefighter. And then again, like, what other job? And it was community fundraiser at St. Anne's. And I projected that in April 2020. And then next, so that was June, music facilitator came along last year. Then in about September, October, a role for communications assistant stroke fundraising assistant at St. Anne's came along. So my partner Jenny was like, should I go for another one? She's like, yeah, it's fundraising and, you know, you'd be a great assistant. So I went for a second attempt at the hospice. Everyone knows me. They're like, hey, Greg. And I knew the people interviewing me. Again, it was on Zoom or MS Teams. And the interview went well, but I fell short on the admin side. I had no office experience, again, being an actor musician. Admin might not be our strongest point. But they shouldn't judge us all on that, though, right?
True. I agree.
So I didn't get that job, but they said, I then had a feedback call after it saying, Greg, I know, I'm sorry, I know, you know, you did a great interview, we just went with someone with more experience. But gave me a little bit of a hint and said, in a few months, the job's coming up that I think you would be great for, so just keep an eye on the website. Which I did, and there was nothing in like January, February this year until a fundraiser called me, a community fundraiser at St. Anne's called Sarah, who is now my colleague who I work with. And she just dropped in the conversation about, oh, we need a cover for community fundraising for a year. I was like, oh, right, so you're saying there's a job available. So she was just checking in with me as a volunteer to see how, you know, and the fundraiser, see how we were getting on and with my challenges this year. And so she just dropped it in the conversation. I was like, oh, right. And she didn't know I'd been going for other jobs at the hospice. So I said, thanks for that, Sarah. What do you think about me going for community? Yeah, you'd be great at it. And then, third time, I went for it again. I went for another job at the hospice, and that was the end of February, I think. And I said to my partner, Jenny, who's upstairs now, working from home, I said, right, I'm going to go for this. If I don't get it, it's fine. It's probably going to be my last attempt because, you know, if I can't get the role as community fundraiser, then what can I get? And I just look back to the last 5 years, out of all the roles at the hospice, this was the one. So if I wasn't to get it, it's fine. There's someone with more experience and whatnot. So I had that kind of attitude. It's like when you go for an audition and you, either way, if you don't get it, you're fine. And if you go in a room with that air about you, it's just so much more enticing and it's just so much more freeing for yourself and more comfortable for the other person. And so I went into that room completely, what will be, and it was on MS Teams, and I had to do a presentation. And it was a little bit stressful getting there because you're like, what am I going to do? What's it going to be about? I've never fundraised before. They want me to talk about how I'm going to generate funds for the hospice. So there was a few sleepless nights building up to this presentation, but I came up with an idea. And then again, I utilized my main selling point as a performer to bring that into the presentation, bring it straight in. So I started off the presentation with a haka, like you do, like New Zealand All Blacks, kamate, all that, really intense. And So just went straight in with that. And they were like, wow, they'd never seen that. They'd never had that in an interview before. And the best thing about technology is it just never delivers when you want it to. And it crashed. So the call dropped. The call dropped. And then we got Lucy texting in the fundraising. Greg, don't worry. Just if you can come back on the line, we'll do it again. So I left them on the haka. And then I came back. My Mac had a problem. So I came back on my phone, which I'm on now, which seems to be a bit more trusty than my MacBook Pro, that's for sure. So I then went back on. I'd abandoned the MacBook Pro. It failed me. So the presentation I had. So in the end, I emailed the slideshow I had and did the haka again. And this time, instead of me saying, clicking on the next slide, I sounded like Chris Whitty from the current, BBC questions. And I was kept saying, next slide, please. And it was quite surreal. But the show goes on, doesn't it? The show must go on.
Exactly.
And you crack on and I got the job.
Oh, wow. So, I think the haka made it.
Well, here's the thing now. Part of my remit is to go to schools, to community fundraiser, get them enticed, tell them all about the hospice. And so the haka may be coming back to schools very soon. So we might bring the haka in, bring some music into it, and get some fun in school and get them fundraising.
That's brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant. Wow, what a story as well. Third time's a charm, definitely.
Yeah, it must be.
Oh, so good. Well, I mean, we wish you every bit of success with your fundraising efforts and in the job role as well, because you definitely deserve it. And I remember saying to my mum, we were both saying how well suited you are to that job. So yeah, I'm sure you'll do amazing things with St. Anne's Hospice. I would absolutely love to chat a little bit more about your experience as an actor musician, really. We've talked a lot about how you've brought those skills into your newest venture. And now, if I may, I'd love to take it back to when you discovered or maybe realised that you wanted to pursue acting as a career, because for most, I would say, there is a very poignant moment within their lives where they sort of go, oh yeah, this is what I want to do, like this is what I'm good at. So was there a moment like that for you?
Yeah, there was. You don't know when that moment comes, but I guess it's going back to the journey of college. I was at Oldham College, and I was a little bit of a rebel back then, and I was suspended from Oldham College in the first year for smoking on the premise. Let's just say that.
Oh, dear me.
Maybe not legal substance. It's funny because if you look at me then to look at me now, and I'm not ashamed to say it, and obviously I was young and foolish, but it's taken me to have those moments in my life where you get shaken and like, it's like you can choose this path or that path. Which are you going to choose, Greg? Yeah. Come on, make a decision. You can blow it here or you can go this way. And I nearly blew it at Oldham College, and a teacher called Joan Illingworth saw something in me, and my dad, who we went to the governor's meeting to get me back at the college to reinstate me, because I was new there as a first year. And so getting back at Oldham College and having that shake up and allowing me back was like, I've got a second chance. So that was a turning point that I was like, I enjoy performance and that's why I went to Oldham College. And so at Oldham College, it was I was on the journey to becoming to know that this is what I want. So I was still going as a college, we're all going through a lot of change adolescence, everything else, and growing up. So that was a notable moment where it's like, all right, I need to go all in at the acting and music here. And so I got through college in the end from that blip at the beginning, and came out with a, you know, a decent grade. And then it's when I went to Saltbridge Uni. And again, the rebel in me was loving the fresher's life. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We all know about that, Becca.
Yes, we do.
And in the first year, we had to do this exam at the end of the year. And I made an ill-informed decision. And the example questions on the test, I thought were the exact questions. So I prepped for the wrong thing, basically. So I went into the exam blind the first year, BA honours degree I was doing, and I just failed it. So I, again, it was like, whoa, are you going to make it through first year at Salford Uni? That's where he's at. You're going to go to Tesco, as our lecturer often said, if you think it's going to be easy acting, get to Tesco. And he said it in a much more less appealing tone, and with expletives thrown in as well. So he painted the picture, you know, acting isn't easy, and
yeah,
you need to dig in and work hard and persevere. So I needed to do that as well in first year. So I came back, I passed, and it was from there that the penny dropped. And I thought, if I'm going to achieve something in acting here, I need to get my stuff together, get my shit together, if that's allowed to be said on your podcast.
It is.
So I did. I did get it together, and I surrounded myself with people that were doing well, people that were on it, people that were very good at acting, people that also were good at the academic side of it. And for the next 2 years, being around that, I really started to progress acting, music. And it was towards the end of the final year, the connections with the tutors and lecturers there, and with this great group that I'm still friends with. And it was from there, really, from graduating, I'd say just from 21 years old was the moment for me in that final year. And when we graduated, this is what acting was what I wanted to do. There was a time between 18 and 21 at Salford. I'm beyond that. I've always had this thing. I've always been a musician since 16. So that's always gone hand in hand. But it was acting and music and was what I wanted to do. And there's quite a lot of overlap with that. So, but it's acting, stroke, music. Yeah, this is it. This is the life I want.
Amazing. That's so cool. And it's amazing as well that, you know, you were faced with that choice on a number of occasions and you always took the better option. You know, God knows where you'd be if you'd have stayed a rebel. But it says a lot about you as a person. And you know, that's something that we always speak about in these podcasts is, I mean, you've been already so open with us and honest about what it is that you do and your past and things like that. And I think being honest with yourself is the best way that you can move forward and progress. So
absolutely. I mean,
kudos to you for that, because that's fantastic. And obviously, since you graduated, you've gone on to do many, many acting roles. And I mean, is there any role or any particular job you've taken on acting wise that you've absolutely loved, that has been like a real highlight for you within your career, would you say?
Yeah. I think there's definitely been two or three highlights. The first one was, it was kind of unreal to go from Edinburgh Fringe to 3 months on Hollyoaks at 21. That was a whirlwind, and I really enjoyed that journey.
Yeah.
I don't think the cast at Edinburgh Fringe enjoyed the journey, because they needed to replace me midway in the run. But I think they understood my reasons for going, and they did retrospectively say, look, we were a bit upset that you'd left for Hollyoaks, but it was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Exactly.
To do it. Because, as you know, getting TV credits, especially in the current climate, it's not easy at all. So 3 months landed on my lap. I took them. I'd say a real highlight though for me, I was in a war drama called Occupation in 2008 and 2009, and just going to set, which would be you'd fly out to Belfast, then you'd fly out to Morocco to do what you love. You can't beat that. And there was a scene where myself and another student from Salford Uni, Warren Brown, we did this scene where we're getting ambushed by, we're in Iraq, but it was filmed in Morocco, and we're being ambushed. And I had to do some stunt driving in this BMW, and we're getting chased, we're being shot at. So I felt like a little kid with guns and just being in this in that scene and having the you're just present, you're in the moment, and you just that feeling as an actor being present and just doing. So that was probably the highlight in Morocco, shooting 100 extras.
That's definitely one to remember, isn't it? My God.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. I mean, what an experience to have. Everyone has a completely different journey within this industry, I feel. And that's what a brilliant credit to have, in your journey. That's amazing. One thing I did want to ask is, I mean, you've had many jobs over the years, and you've had various different experiences, as we've discussed in this podcast. Is there anything that you would perhaps recommend to people starting out, or people maybe getting into the industry for the first time? From your experiences, is there anything, any little pockets of wisdom that you'd share?
I'd definitely say try as many experiences as an actor or as a creative as you can. Don't put up any barriers or shackles around yourself. Be curious.
Yeah.
And I've not mentioned yet, I did mention about that Occupation drama, but some of my greatest experiences in acting is doing the live theatre, doing JB Shorts, having that live audience. You just, as you know, Becky, you can't beat it. Just having that purple patch where you're just in, you're there, you're present, and the audience is with you. And if you don't know you're going to experience that if you don't try it. So just trying as many outlets within the creative field you're in as you can, and you'll definitely find an area like, right, well, I prefer this. And once you do know what you prefer, go with it. Put all your energy into that and see where it takes you. We know Joe Lycett, who I work with as an usher, and he went to the Comedy Store. He had this comedy itch. And he went to the Comedy Store, and literally within about 3 months, he was curious about comedy. He did it because I did a feature film with him in setting Birmingham, and I helped him out with this low budget feature film. I wonder if he's still got that somewhere. And he was directing it, I wonder. And but he moved away from that, and he focused on his comedy. And when you know he was curious about that, he found out he had an amazing skill at that, and the rest is history. So really, don't be afraid to try. And if you then go, well, there's nothing out there for me, well, you can make it happen. There's always a way. There's always a way, I think.
Absolutely. Well, that seems like a perfect point to end this podcast, because you incorporated our ethos in there, which is make it happen. That is exactly what we try and instill into the people that we work with, is that if you want to achieve something, no matter what it is, just make it happen for you. At the end of the day, as you've said, and rightly so, we are our own greatest barriers in many respects. You know, if we think we can't do something, then we are setting a barrier for ourselves. So it is having that belief in yourself that you can achieve whatever you set your mind to.
Absolutely.
Oh, this has been such a wonderful chat, Greg. Thank you so much. If you want to take a moment to plug any of your social medias, like where can we find you online?
Okay, so online, I'm on Facebook just under Greg Kelly. Anyone's welcome to reach out that way. But also I'm on Instagram as @GregKellyActor. I'm on Twitter @GregKellyActor. So always happy to anyone to reach out about anything, really, from fundraising to music to acting. But a closing note to back to what you were saying, it was a podcast I was listening to, and a quote that stayed with me, and I think it just works in all areas, and it goes like this. If you focus on what you lack, you lose what you have. If you focus on what you have, you gain what you lack. And that for me is epitomizes everything, really. How we can approach things. We can look at things that we're not quite good at, or we can reframe it and look at what we are good at and make that happen. So that stayed with me, and I thought maybe your listeners would like to hear that one too.
Absolutely. I tell you what, we love a good positive quote like that. our social media, as many of our followers know, it's just full of them. I'm a sucker for a good positive quote.
Yeah, I'm sure you remember that. I'll send it to you again, or you just play it back.
Yeah, please do. No, that would be amazing. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure, Greg. Again, thank you so, so much.
And really enjoyed it.
Oh, good, I'm glad. And to everyone that has watched on YouTube, thank you very much for watching. Leave a like on the video, comment down below. We would love to hear your thoughts. And reach out to us. As Greg said, our inboxes are always open, both Blue Balloon and Greg's, if you need any bit of advice or just want to chat. And if you've been listening on Spotify, Anchor, or anywhere else that you get your podcasts, thank you so much for listening. And hooray for season 2 of this podcast. It's been a joy so far. But until the next time, guys, we will see you very soon. Bye, Greg.
Bye now. Thank you. Thanks for having me.